Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
We're gonna kill the Slayer.
Singing my song now, are you? You should pay me royalties for that one, or at least get your own tune.
I'm not gonna make the same mistakes you did. I've been doing my homework, reading books and stuff.
What, Evil for Dummies? I mean, look at you, all puffed up and mighty, thinking you're the new big bad. Well, let's face it, it's adorable.
You just can't stand the fact that I'm my own person now. There comes a time in every woman's life when she realizes she needs to take the next step. I've taken it. I've found the real me, and I like her.
Well, hello.
Hi.
Jenny, we just talked last week, but we're here again.
I know. Just one week later.
Here we are again.
Wow.
They said it couldn't be done, but here we are, breaking records, defying expectations, and bringing forth onto the world our interview with Mercedes McNabb.
Holy.
Your interview with Mercedes McNabb.
Yes. Collectively, spiritually, both of ours, but physically, I was the only one in the room.
It was pretty
exciting. Mercedes lives up in the Bay Area. And when I was there, it was actually several months ago, but we saved it because we wanted it to sort of like be in a place where harmony was back. And we knew harmony was coming back. So we have sort of like bided our time. Our patrons got this early, but for you all, this will be the first time that you are hearing the full interview. She is such a delight, as is probably
a treasure,
right? And it's probably not surprising at this point, because I swear to you, every person we have sat down with from this entire show has been a delight.
It's for real.
But we love Harmony. Harmony has very, 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 very cool character growth, as we're seeing in this season. This interview will have spoilers in it. You can just kind of go. It goes without saying that if we interview a cast member from the show and we put the full interview up here, it is going to have spoilers. We'll always warn you. But when we talk to somebody, especially somebody as impactful as Mercedes McNabb on the series, we want to talk to them about everything we can. So if you have not watched the series, you should hang tight so that you don't get spoiled on anything harm related.
Just come back and listen later.
Yes.
Also, hey, for those of you who live in the Bay Area, like Mercedes, we have a San Francisco live taping coming up on December 6th, and there are still some tickets available.
Yeah.
You can go to bufferingthevampireslayer.com and click events for information.
Yes, you should. You should get on over there and snag your tickets. The tickets that are left are in the like the balcony, which I just feel like I know.
We haven't done a taping in a place with a balcony yet.
I know. And people, I think, you know, gravitate towards the orchestra, the bottom. People want to be like as close as possible. But personally, I like myself a balcony.
Nice bird's eye, bat's eye.
Yeah, you can finally
top wolf's eye view.
You can finally see what the tops of our heads look like, you know?
Hell yes, mine is nice.
We're going to have some really fun special guests. We will be announcing them soon. But you know they're always great. And I want to say that if you listen to my podcast about my so-called life, you know that one Joanna Robinson has already talked about the fact that not only will she be guesting on this episode, Fool for Love, with us, but she is probably going to be bleaching her hair.
Oh, my God.
And has recently been Googling videos on how to properly smudge eyeliner.
Well, who among us hasn't?
So if you know what that means, you know what that means. You probably want to get tickets and come see the show. It's going to be so much fun. It's our first time in the Bay Area, first time in San Francisco as Buffering the Vampire Slayer. So come see us. Also, this past weekend was Angel's 20th anniversary. The premiere of Angel was 20 years ago last Saturday. And so we just wanted to say, if you haven't hopped on over to our socials, if you didn't see, we did a couple of really fun tributes to the show. One was a sort of little glimpse at the glimpse or full bared chest, really, of David Boreanaz as Angel, especially through the series Buffy. And we also made made a tribute to Cordelia Chase, of course.
Yes.
Jenny recorded a beautiful song that takes us through the history of Cordelia. I put a video to it. It's very fun. And you can find both of those videos in full on our Patreon page. They're free. You don't have to be a patron. You can just go on over to patreon.com/bufferingcast and you'll see both of those things. They're very fun. Also, this Friday is National Coming Out Day. If you're coming out, hey, fucking congrats. You know what I mean?
Yeah, congratulations.
As you know, I do a lot of work with Queer Community, and I want to just give a shout to the fact that it is National Coming Out Day. And if you or someone you know has come out as trans or non-binary, perhaps you would like to share with them the resource that My Kid Is Gay just released into the world. It is an e-care package for parents and loved ones of trans and non-binary young people. And I say young people, but that's actually not true. It's really a resource for anyone who loves someone who is trans or non-binary and wants to work to better understand how gender operates in their own life. It's pretty fucking cool. And it does not use the word fuck. I just do that here on the podcast. You can find it at mykidisgay.com. Also, the day after National Coming Out Day, October 12th, I will be down in Atlanta at Switch Yards doing the first ever all ages pride party in the South in Atlanta. We're going to have music by B. Steadwell. We're going to have slam poetry from Atlanta WordWorks Youth Poets. I'm going to be there hosting. It's free. It's open to everybody. It's a really special event. And I would love for you to come out and support it because it is our first time down in Atlanta. And I'm really excited to see all of your faces.
Hell yeah.
Oh, and you can find out all of the details at allagespride.com.
Also, hey, I'm Jenny, as you may remember, and I make music when I'm not doing this podcast. And I've been putting out songs the last few months. I've put out a song a month for the last few months, and I have one coming out next Friday as well. So feel free to hop onto Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you listen to music. You can find those jams. They are called Vampire Weeknight and Living Room and Dreaming on the Bus. And the one that's coming out next week is called Gravitron. And you should consider putting them in your ears if you like to put stuff in your ears.
I know Gravitron already, and it's...
Okay.
I'm not trying to show off. I just, like, I felt it in my bones. It's such a good one.
Thanks.
So, yeah, go do those things. Go find us and support us and have a blast with us over on the internet and all the places. But for now, why don't you take a journey with me and Mercedes McNabb? And, of course,
yes.
Next week, we'll be back with The Replacement, Season 5, Episode 3, Two Xanders, No Waiting. Let's go into it, shall we, Jenny?
Please.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day and talking to us. We've been doing this podcast for 2 years now, and people are just so excited to get the chance to hear from you and about your time on Buffy.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for being one of our most beloved, cordette turned vampires.
Beloved, really?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a mixed review.
Yeah, really? Well, let's start there.
I feel like some people love her and some people hate her.
Well, we're
or can't
much...
stand would maybe be a little bit more accurate, but it's always hard not to take that personally.
Do you get feedback? I mean, maybe not now, but during the run of the show, did you get feedback that was like, we hate
not so much, thankfully, because social media didn't really exist in the beginning. And then also I was still in high school when the show started. So I was smart enough to just stay. I had enough drama at school to deal with. I also didn't need to hear it in a public forum. So I just kind of stayed away from all of that. But with social media now, you know, people post like a thing about like, what's your favorite character? Who's your least favorite character? And I'll kind of glance at it, see if my name comes up.
Imagine anyone's least favorite character being Harmony.
Oh no, I think she annoyed the crap out of people, really? Which is kind of the point.
Right,
so,
but in like a, I guess,
hopefully slightly endearing way.
Yeah, I mean, one of the questions I had was actually about that sort of like the villains that we love on the show. There are so many, and wondering if you had the experience from like directors or writers that asked you to go in that way once Harmony became a vampire, or even before Harmony became a vampire, sort of making her lovable. Was that not an intention?
I mean, it always is in as an actor in any character, you want people to identify with you on many different levels. And then if you're the villain, you really do want to make a choice to get people to kind of side with you in some small way if you can. It makes it just more interesting to watch and more relatable. Otherwise, people will just absolutely hate your character. So if you have some things that are redeemable, it helps, I think, your character grow. But I think some people just got really annoyed by Harmony.
We came out pretty strong season one as major Cordelia fans. Mm-hmm. So we were immediately
just kind of in the same vein. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the trope of the mean girl is, I can see, of course, for a lot of reasons why people might not like that trope. But I think for us, we look at it as like, well, how do these women have power, though? Like, what are they using that's powerful for them?
Well, it's also easier when you're older and you're out of maybe the high school dynamic where you're actually dealing with that. I mean, I guess you deal with it on a certain level, no matter where you go.
Forever.
But yeah, exactly. It never goes away. It just kind of seems smaller, or you can separate yourself out of it or make a choice to. You don't have to be put in it every day, all day.
Right.
So,
So you mentioned being 16 when the show started. So were you the youngest person in the cast? And you're the only person who was in the unaired pilot and made it all the way, spoilers, to the end of Angel.
Yes, the longest running character.
So tell us a little bit about the process. Like, how did you come to the audition? You auditioned for the role of Buffy. So tell us about that. How did it work?
God,
what you remember.
I auditioned for Buffy, and it was almost, I think it was, it's a very similar scene from the scene in the movie. And I remember it kept saying, like, what's the sitch? What's the sitch? And I was like, I don't get it. Because I was in high school. I'm like, we don't talk like this. Yeah. We don't know what the sitch is. It was like almost what Mean Girls with the fetch thing. It was like this word that was trying to catch, and it just wasn't. So anyway, so I auditioned. I ended up meeting Joss auditioning it. And then as it goes in L.A., you just never hear a word ever again. Like, you did great. And then that's all. Yeah. So, and then I guess from the time that they were auditioning to the time they started the pilot, they just called and said, you know, there's a really minor role, but would she want to do it? So I said, hell yeah. And I think I only had like a couple lines. It was really insignificant. But it was just trying to find the, because Cordelia obviously is like the lead mean girl. So you don't just want to, they were written pretty similarly. They had the funny lines and the really snarky and rude and bitchy. So how do you kind of separate Harmony and Cordelia? So you're not like watching two of the same people. So it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
So I can't remember if it was in the first, it was a scene at the computer when we're doing a project together. I don't know if that was, that wasn't in the pilot. I think it was in one of the first episodes. And I was able to have a moment of just total airheadedness. And I just rolled with it. And I think from that moment, the writers were like, oh, that's what we're going to do with her.
Wow.
Yeah, because I figured Cordelia can be the lead bitch, and then I'll be her total airhead lemming that follows her around and does whatever she says, you know, and then that could also be funny. So I think that was like a moment for everybody, like, oh, cool, that's what we'll do with her.
Yeah, and that was like part of the question. And we always put, you know, we told everybody that listens to us that we're doing this interview, and so they had a lot of questions. And one of them was that, like, how much input did you have in the role of Harmony? And it sounds like right from the jump, some of what you were doing informed
the
role.
Yeah, I think it was just, they had written it. It was a moment that I found that didn't necessarily exist on the page, of just taking a moment to like think through my thoughts, and then it would take longer than an average person to figure that out, you know? So it was that kind of beat of humor that was happening. And then I think that kind of inspired the writers to kind of head that direction.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe I'm totally insane and they knew that was going to happen the whole time, but in my mind,
I
want to take a little credit for it.
Yeah, I think your version checks out. Yeah. Let's talk just a little bit, and we'll go back to the beginning again, but in terms of how that shifted once Harmony came back as a vampire, like, how much input did you have in that iteration of Harmony?
I'll be honest, I had zero input in anything. Sometimes Joss would say, well, we're thinking of this, and da-da-da-da, and then you just would never know, and you wouldn't, I don't know, I wouldn't really put my two cents in. I'm not going to try to tell Joss what to do. Just, like, happy to be there.
Right.
So he would kind of just roll some brainstorms around you, but then most of that stuff would never even happen, and he'd come up with something entirely different. So I just kind of showed up, did my job, and left, and was just grateful to be there.
Yeah.
And then the writing, obviously, I think just got so much more interesting once she became a vampire, because there's so many different things and avenues you could pursue. And then her relationship with James and all that stuff.
Yeah, I like that really you said her relationship with James.
I know, like mixing.
So let's talk a little bit maybe about what you knew when you came to the show. Like it sounds like you knew you were coming in for a part, but not how long, of course, that part
would go.
Yeah,
I thought it was, well, first of all, the pilot, you never know if it's going to make it. So sure. That was just a one-off deal. And then coming back, I guess the first episode, again, I was just contracted to do each episode. I wasn't hired as a regular. So when you're a regular, you know you're going to be in X amount of episodes in a season. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're a recurring, it depends on your contract. So mine was never contracted to be anything more than just one episode at a time.
Wow.
Up until Angel.
All the way up until Angel, mm-hmm. It was one at a time.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I just never knew. So I would always just read, like, they'd say, are you busy? And I'd be like, well, let me read the script first and then find out if I die, and I'll let you know if I'm busy.
And you just never
I just
did.
Never die. They just couldn't get rid of me. So that's kind of how it worked. So I was always on the edge of my seat reading kind of the end of the script before the beginning, just skipping to my parts. Yeah, to see if this is the death. And then be like, okay, whew, save for another episode. So.
Did you use anyone in media or real people to inspire Harmony on either side, either as a mortal or a vampire?
Not really. It was, you know, you watch enough. I think I just played her as I would have played her normally. She just had all these kind of superpowers, if you will, mm-hmm. you know, but she was still inherently the same person.
Yeah, and that's like that's an interesting shift too, going from human to vampire. There's sort of like one of the lures in the show is that so much of who you are as a person still
translates,
exists.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a vampire. And something that Jenny, my co-host, and I were talking about is Harmony's vulnerability, mm-hmm. and that it almost seems like when Harmony becomes immortal and less vulnerable, like physically.
Mm-hmm. She became more vulnerable. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like she kind of lived in this romantic state of like she thought she was living in a movie. So she knows what vampires were. She knows that they're supposed to be this way, but she just can't really get there emotionally. So she doesn't know what she's doing.
And she has, and this is, again, you know, we're going all the way through here, but she has such an interesting arc. I think like one of the most interesting arcs out of all the characters, because she's a vampire who doesn't have a soul, but like ultimately doesn't harm
most people,
right? And so I think that's just a really powerful thing. And I wonder if that does that play into sort of that understanding of that she saw herself in a movie, but like ultimately didn't really actually
really want to be what that was, what that meant to be. Yeah, I mean, I think that it was like this idea, and Harmony would just do whatever anyone was she was with, like Cordelia or James. She would just take on kind of that person's ideology,
yeah.
and kind of do whatever. So if James was on a killing rampage, she probably would have done that too.
Right.
Thankfully, he wasn't at that time, so she didn't have to do that. But or Cordelia, be as mean as you can to people. Okay, I'll do that. You know, so it's like she just kind of followed the leader.
Totally.
Totally. So she kind of escaped the like killing spree, I guess. But you never know.
Well, and I think with Spike, with the character of Spike, we see her enter as somebody who is really following. Mm-hmm. But then there's a shift where, you know, she's a character who, like, uses her sexuality to get what she wants, but then sort of realizes that she can actually get what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder maybe to, like, expand that out a little bit, sort of your decisions in the show, and also just being a woman on the set playing a part like that, what that experience was like.
I think, you know, during that time I was probably like 18 or 19. I don't think I knew or still know that women have these feminine wiles you can like use.
Right.
That's just not where I'm coming from at all.
Same.
So the whole thing is kind of foreign to me. So I don't know that I knew that I was kind of playing that, but
yeah.
I must have been because doing what the writers had asked of me. But I don't think in my mind that's where I was headed with that.
Totally.
Yeah.
What was it like working with James? That is something that so many people on Twitter, please tell us what it was like to work with James.
James was really great to work with. One of my favorite scenes of the whole show was working with him. just because his theater background, he really does keep you in the moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, TV, you're doing it so many times that you kind of can phone it in sometimes. Yeah. So working with him, you really are totally in the moment. And it does give you those feelings of like, oh, this is why I actually got into acting, to have that kind of everything else in the world fades away and we're right here being these people.
Right.
So it was always great to work with him. And he takes it very seriously in a way that I appreciate, because a lot of times when you're on a show for a long time, people kind of just get lazy, mm-hmm. which he never did. So it was fun to work with him doing that.
What is that favorite scene that you're talking
about? When he like throws me against the wall in Harsh Light of Day. You know, he's hurt, abusive, yeah. if you will, but it was just very real. It just felt, you know, totally genuine.
This one tastes funny. Take me out to eat.
He's perfectly fresh.
I think I had a math class with him last year, and I didn't like him that much then either.
Tom.
I want to go to a party. No. Right here, baby. In front of Brian.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Maybe I would. After a party.
Their relationship is really skirts a line, because it is abusive, but also there's like a play element mm-hmm. to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, and the comedic timing between, I mean, your comedic timing in general, but also the comedic timing between both of you is mm-hmm. fantastic.
Thank you.
It's just so fun to watch.
It was fun to do. And then, James is just fun to work with.
Well, graduation day mm-hmm. is a pivotal point yeah. for you, and you didn't even know it at the time,
nope.
nor did we.
Right.
But what was it like on set? Do you remember that day, or those days, I should say, shooting the
Mainly,
that final
I just
scene?
Remember staring at a stick with a smiley face on it, and that was supposed to be the snake. And someone was waving it around like this.
Oh, my God.
And that was supposed to be the horrible, horrific CGI snake that we were all running from our lives.
So just a regular sized person holding a tiny stick, like a yardstick?
Like a yardstick with a piece of paper and a sticky outy tongue kind of a thing on it.
Oh my God.
That was, yeah, the glamorous acting days. It was, yeah, I mean, that. What else could you really, right. What are they going to put up there that's going to be remotely scary? Nothing. Yeah. So they're just kind of like, you just need your eye line, everyone to be looking at the same thing. That's all that really matters. So I remember that. And then I remember, just not knowing really what was going to happen to Harmony after that. Obviously being hopeful.
Yeah.
That, you know, getting bitten by a vampire generally leads to being a vampire. But you never know.
Yeah.
That could have been it. So, yeah.
I'm never going to be able to watch Graduation Day the same again, knowing that there was a tiny smiley face stick mm-hmm. as the mayor.
Yeah, that was amazing. The mayor. The scary, scary mayor. It's so funny. And those hideous uniforms, or the graduation, the gowns. Yeah, all that.
So were you filming that scene before you graduated from high school, or had you graduated at that point?
I think before. Yeah, I think that was like my first...
That
gown I got to wear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was familiar with that polyester after that.
Maybe before we go to another episode, since I'm now realizing like you're 16, you're 17, and you had been acting. A lot of people actually brought up your character in the Addams Family mm-hmm. and Addams Family Values as they believe that that character just grew up to be
right
to be Harmony.
Me typecast? No. Never.
But what? When did you start acting, and how did you get into acting?
I started. Well, my first professional job was the first Addams Family when I was 11. And then I did the second one when I was 13, and those people, characters were not supposed to be the same person.
Right.
It actually worked against me getting the role. They didn't want to have me do it. I don't know why, but then it kind of worked. So like they meet again, this horrible person just like keeps following them. So it kind of worked in the story's favor. But yeah, there was no intention of that happening. And so those were my two like first big jobs.
Yeah. What a way to start. It's like...
Well, I mean, yeah, you say that, but I was trying to think about it, and I was like, I probably must have auditioned for, 6 months before I actually got that job,
right.
you know? I mean,
right.
I don't remember because I was 11, but I was not one of those like, oh, it was my first audition.
Yeah.
I just got it. Like, that was not the case yeah. for me at all.
Yeah.
I'm sure I like busted my ass for a good couple months. I could ask my mom, she'd remember, but... because it was hard. You had to... you had to be in SAG to get a job, but you couldn't get a job unless you were in SAG. It was this weird catch 22. Right. So it was kind of hard to get in, but once you were in, obviously made it easier.
So what was your experience being that age and getting that role and then subsequent roles and sort of, I imagine doing some of your education on sets mm-hmm. and things like that. What was that like?
You know, I liked it because I didn't really know any different, but I did experience a lot of kind of backlash when I would go back to school. I don't know if it was because the characters were as they were or what, but it's just even like the people that I was really good friends with would get, and girls in junior high just are horrible. I have a daughter and I'm just like, can we just skip 7th and 8th grade? I don't wish that on anybody.
Yeah.
It's the worst. And that's when I started getting, you know, on. I was in movies and TV. So like, you know, nobody really liked that a lot. So it was kind of a hard thing to go back and forth in between these two worlds.
I'm sure that, like, you know, you want to feel like you're part of the actual school that you go to.
Yeah.
And people are looking at you like, oh, you're special.
Yeah.
You're doing something
different.
And
she thinks she's so cool now. It's like, really? I don't. I promise.
I don't actually feel cool at all.
Yeah,
can you help me out with that?
I have braces and, like, no boobs just like the rest of us.
So you have a daughter now. Ooh. Has she seen your work on
not
any of
a
those
thing.
Films?
Not a thing.
Intentionally? Or?
Well, a lot of it. I don't want her to watch, like, Bullies. I don't want her to talk, you know, just yeah. even know that language exists. She'll get there when she gets there and avoid it as long as you can. And then, or that's, you know, too graphic or gruesome.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing. I've shown her pictures of me as a vampire, which actually helped me when she was having nightmares.
Really?
So I'd be like, you know, she'd be like, oh, monsters or whatever. I'm like, no, they're not real. See, this is your own mom dressed up as a vampire. It's like, it's not even real.
But that could have really gone one of two ways.
Yeah, exactly. So that kind of actually helped.
How old is she?
She'll be six soon.
Okay.
So I think there'll be a time. And then if I show her things from when I was little, say like the Girl Scout in Adam's Family, which is pretty benign. Right. She doesn't understand that that's me. Like, she doesn't translate.
That makes sense.
So.
Because moms aren't.
Kids
are always a mom.
Yeah, yeah.
You're always
can't
been
be.
My mom.
I was never a kid.
Yeah.
Or a teenager or anything, right? I'll never understand. But so she doesn't really get that.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be a time for it.
But yeah, I'm sure there'll be a Buffy viewing. Having talked to other actors from the show who have kids who are older, we've had those conversations of like, yes, they've watched. And,
yeah.
You know, we had to unpack stuff.
Well, I talked to fans and they have, I think around 8 is when it seems to be like the youngest that you start watching. But they have to fast forward
yeah.
and get through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, so maybe selective scenes.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hello, my name is Alison Larkin, and I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of the Jane Austen podcast. This podcast brings Jane Austen's stories to the 21st century, along with commentary from me and conversations with fascinating people who all share a love of Jane Austen. And of course, we had to start with none other than Pride and Prejudice. So join me as we embark on a journey through some of the most wonderful stories I know. The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Show.
So, let's go back to the show for a second. The epic fight scene between you and Xander, of course, Harmony and Xander,
oh, yeah.
not you, is on all of our minds. It's hilarious. And I would love to hear, I know everyone would love to hear a little bit about filming that scene, how it went, what it was like.
Well, it was slightly ridiculous because they made Nick wear like shin guards because I kick him in the shin at one point. So you had to wear shin guards, and I think it was very, you know, the stunt people were very interested in us not getting hurt. I'm like, I'm pretty sure we're not going to get hurt. We're not even touching each other. And then I didn't know at the time that they were filming it in slow motion. So it was funny, and we knew it was funny just because it was so ridiculous. But then when you watched it on the show and it was slowed down and made to be super dramatic, then it got even funnier.
Yeah.
So that helped.
Did they give you direction apart from like kick his shin? Was it ad?
Oh, no. It was fully staged.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, you know, everyone's got their job to do. So that every like little tiny slap was planned out.
It's choreographed. It's
kind of ridiculous when you think about it.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, it looks completely natural. It looks like they said, like, just, hey, can you just like bat each other around a
little
bit?
I think that's kind of what we ended up doing. But yeah, they had it semi-planned out because, like I said, he had shin guards on and something else. I can't remember what it was. Some protective gear.
It makes it even funnier.
I know. That it's happening under the clothes.
Yeah, that like everyone's very concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Nick might get hurt.
He might get an owie on his shin bone.
So I'm going to ask a couple of questions that were listener submitted.
Okay.
JJ from Twitter wanted to know what advice you would give to human Harmony and what advice you'd give to vampire Harmony. It might be the same.
Both of them. Just, you know, do your own thing. Just try to find your own passion and go with that, not just glom onto other people's all the time.
Yeah.
That would be, I think, for both of them.
The show is so incredible. I mean, in so many ways, but like the variety of female characters and like this, what they span is so powerful, you know, that we get to see everybody from, you know, some like women who like already know, like, I believe in myself, to women who like go on that journey.
Right.
As we watch them on the show. So, yeah, we all want Harmony to believe in herself more.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite episode or scene from Buffy? You mentioned the scene with James as one of your favorites. Do you have others that really stick out to you?
I think that Angel was the kind of episode dedicated to Harmony.
Harm's Way.
Which no other character really had that either. Turned out I think it was just an episode that so all the other cast members could go to Hawaii or something. Nobody else worked that week. It was me and a bunch of other castmates that weren't on the show ever. So I'm like, where is everybody? God. This is so weird. But I think it was one of the only episodes solely dedicated to kind of not a central character.
Yeah.
So that was one of my favorite things just because it was so flattering to be trusted and given that opportunity, you know, and then it was just so fun to do it. But I think it was just a nice little like ego boost that they were trusting me to, hey, like, here, have a whole episode to yourself and see what happens.
It had to be like such an incredible experience too, to be sort of somebody that was on the series through the whole run of both Buffy and Angel, but also not there all the time.
Yeah.
Was that like, did you find that like your relationships on set were different because you were coming in and out?
I feel like it was a blessing and a curse. Like everyone all got so close because you're spending 14 hours a day to with each other. But then also spending all that time with people can also make people annoyed with one another.
Right.
So I could kind of come in, lighten the mood, and then come out. But I never felt like I was like part of the gang kind of thing. So Angel being there consistently, I had that kind of bonding feeling more.
And both shows were filmed in Los Angeles. So were you just living in Los Angeles for the bulk of that whole time?
Yeah, I was living. So Buffy was filmed in Santa Monica, this place called Bergamot Station, which is a cool little lot in the middle of kind of a strange part of the city. And I was living in Huntington Beach at the time, so I'd have to drive. When I first got my driver's license, that was the only place I was allowed to drive on the freeway was to work and back. And then we shot Angel at Paramount, which felt so official.
Yeah, that's
like the lot. The big it's in time. Every movie.
Yeah.
So like, that's it. You get your drive on at Paramount. You're like, I have made it now.
So, and as somebody who was on the show from the very beginning, did you have a sense of it really getting to, I mean, of course, you can't get to cult status, I guess, until after the show is over. But do you have moments where you remember being like, oh, wow, people are really watching this show and really care about these characters?
I mean, like you said, I think all that kind of happened after the fact, but for me, especially for my character, obviously, like, the Scooby gang, if you will, I think that was a totally different experience. But I think for Harmony, she kind of took a while for everyone to, like, get into her. Totally. But I know, and also, I kind of avoided watching the show, like, The Plague at that age, just because I never wanted to watch myself. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, so even now I can, now that it's been X amount of years, I can watch it.
Have you watched the full
series?
Yeah,
now I have, yes. But at the time I didn't at all, so I had no idea. So I kind of just stayed away and closed my ears.
Were you involved? I imagine you were, at least in the beginning, in doing, like, cons and things like that. Like, have you interacted with the fandom?
Yeah, absolutely.
How's that been?
It's been great. And because the cast, we all, I mean, most shows you just kind of end and, you know, you see, maybe see the person once again in your lifetime or touch base here and there. So this is a great way for everyone in the cast to kind of get to see each other. And it's like a reunion all the time.
Yeah.
And then meeting the fans, and I just am in awe that people, there's such a strong base out there still.
Still.
People will say that they were having a really tough time for whatever reason, and the show is the one thing that got them through and in ways saved their lives, which is, like, mind-blowing to me and such an immense compliment. So it's that escapism, but in a way that you can also relate to what's going on, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of escapism, I'm going to take us on a hard angle turn.
Oh, boy.
How do you feel about unicorns? Did you get to keep any from the set?
Oh, God. No. The only thing I wanted to keep from the set was my vampire teeth, which subsequently got sold on eBay.
What?
I know. If anyone's listening and has my teeth, please can I have them back? Because they only fit me. So I don't know what you're doing with them.
Come on.
But can I please have them back? Hey. I want to scare small children on Halloween. Come on.
This is the place where you might find them.
I know, right? So I'm begging. I implore anyone that knows where they are.
Because Scoobies.
Because Fox sold everything, including my teeth, which I think is weird. And they would, like, threaten you. Like, we are going around with papers, like, itemizing every prop, everything.
That you cannot take.
That you can't take. And I'm such a goody two-shoes, I was actually listening to him like an idiot. Should have stolen so much stuff.
I was
going to
say, we've gotten.
I know. I should have. I'm such a nervous now. So I just didn't take anything. I have a picture of the unicorns on my desk. I'm sure when I was a kid, I liked unicorns. And then now my daughter's 5. So that's like all she thinks about. Right. And I did a movie where I rode a unicorn.
What?
So I showed her that picture and she's like so mad at me.
Were you?
She's so mad.
Were you riding a horse that? Like, were you riding an actual horse? I mean, sorry. Were you riding a real unicorn?
Of course.
Of course.
Yes, it was a magical, real unicorn. This beautiful white one with a horn. And
Hollywood.
Yeah, I know. That's what I told my daughter. I was like, well, if you really want to meet one, you have to write a movie. And then they'll get you one. That's how it works. But you got to work on writing your movie first. That's how it's going to. Because she's like, why did you get one and I didn't? I'm like, well, start writing, girl.
God. Do you have you're telling us some behind the scenes stuff, especially that you didn't get to keep your own teeth, which I agree is weird. but do you have behind the scenes moments, you know, things that were supposed to go one way and didn't, or any things that stick out that were off camera?
I remember, well, Angel again, but the camel in one of the scenes, just like urinating all over the floor mid scene, like splashing back on all of our legs. That was a delight.
Did you stop rolling or did you just power through?
I think we tried to power through, but when you feel urine hitting your legs, you're like, I think I'm gonna take a break.
You know, when we sat down today, I didn't think I would hear you say the sentence, when you feel
urine hitting your legs.
Hitting your legs, but here we are.
Here we are. Take it right, keep it to the top. Top notch all the way over here.
A few more fun online questions. People were asking, and since you've seen the series, perhaps you have an opinion, if you are team Bangel or Spuffy. I hope I pronounced those couple names correctly.
I know, I'm trying to, like, decipher what's
Buffy and Angel or Buffy and Spike.
I got it.
Cool.
I mean, I'd have to say Buffy and Angel just because Spike's mine, right?
That's exactly how I thought you would answer. I'm glad that in my mind.
Yes, we are simpatico.
Right. Samantha from Facebook wrote in and said, I'd love to know what you think Harmony would be doing now in 2019, assuming that she is still alive, which I just feel like
Well, have you not read the comics, Samantha?
Oh, do we know? Do the comics still continue? Because
Yeah. You supposedly, last I heard, she outed vampires as living amongst us, right. And then she had a reality show.
Yes, like, Reality Bites? No.
Yeah, something. It's got to be, right? Yeah. Okay, what else? What other name could you come up with? So that's happening. I feel like right now Harmony would be like the Bachelorette or something.
Oh,
with all her suitors.
That is great.
And then that
again, the next comic. You're going to be like,
That was it. But I feel like that's probably what she'd be doing, her own season of The Bachelorette. And she would be the queen bee picking through a bunch of guys.
You have given us all something to think.
Live for.
Yes, truly live for.
I try.
Please, if you're out there listening, give us that.
Uh-huh. I know. I'm interested to see where the reboot goes. Because, I mean, if they go after the comic books, I might have a shot in hell of being on it.
Oh, my God. Right. Harmony could continue as the longest running.
Yeah, I could just keep on going.
So do you want to tell us anything about what you're doing now, what you're up to?
I'm, like, semi-retired, I guess, which sounds weird saying it since it's awesome. The only, like, career I've identified with since I was young, like, really young.
Right.
But I'm right now raising my two kids. I have two, a younger son and an older daughter. So just kind of busy with that.
Yeah. I feel like that's an amazing thing to take a break.
Yeah.
Take a breath.
Yeah.
Raise kids. Seems important.
It's like since I started so young, I feel like I'm kind of on the typical glide path of like, I should be retired now.
Right. You're like the
opposite. I worked long enough. Yeah. Now I'm retired.
The inverse of like being a young mom and like get it, you know, you're like,
yeah,
I was an actor when I was so
no,
tiny.
Now when I, you know, talked about, you know, just reengaging or acting, I'm like, well, you know, originally it was the young mom. And I'm like, young mom, that's so weird. Like, it just doesn't feel right. And now my husband's like, I don't even think you're the young mom. You're just the mom. Like, thanks a lot, honey. Just mom, and then I'll soon be a grandma, and then that'll be it. So there's probably some space for it. I would definitely go back. I just want to, you know, wait till my kids are older.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, one last question, too. Mm-hmm. Was Blondie Bear written for you, or was that something that, like...
Oh, there was no improv.
So you did not invent Blondie
that
Bear.
I know that no one ever improv. Joss was very particular about his words.
Right.
And also just the timing of the writing and everything, like there wasn't a lot of room for that. Mm-hmm. And most TV, there's not. So Blondie Bear, I had to say probably 90 times because Joss was there that day and he had a vision and I wasn't getting the vision apparently. And you know, he didn't want to give me a line reading. And I was like, you could just give me a line reading. It's fine because I don't know how many more times I can say this differently.
So somewhere there's footage of you just saying Blondie Bear.
Over and over and over. I'm like, peeking my head. And, you know, like, okay, how do I say it differently now? It's just that nuance. But he's so particular, and that's why he's so good at what he does, because he knows how he wants it, and he hears it. And so you just need to, like, be the vessel.
Yeah. Right?
So I did say Blondie Bear a numerous amount of times that day.
Plus, I just got you to say it again at least three times.
Right. So there
gotcha.
We are. Yay.
I thought you did a great job saying it.
Well, thank you. It took me a while to get there. But I finally got it.
I cannot thank you enough for sitting down and
yeah, this has been fun. Thank you.
It's just been a joy. And yeah, just thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.